You ever been at a grocery store and you're just going about your business from day to day? So you're at the grocery store, you're shopping for stuff, and you always hear that one kid who's screaming. You hear that one kid who's saying, "Mommy, Mommy, I don't want that," or "Why can't we just go home," or something like that. And I think, oh, great. You gotta listen to this kid again. Why does he have to do this? And so it's interesting. I mean, we look down on this kid. And I would look down on this kid. He's being really annoying. But I think in some sense, we do the same thing. Now, I don't think we do it maybe in the same way, but you think about this idea of complaining. I think that's something we see around us all too often. You look at the media, some of the news and how that's spread. There's a lot of complaining. Look at the internet. You find discussions about various things, and there seems to be a lot of complaining. Think of the workplace. Some of the people around there, seems like they're always in this habit of complaining. Perhaps you even see this in the home between husband and wife, or I know as a child I've complained before to my parents. And sad to say, it might even be something that sometimes we do among brethren. And so this seems to be sort of a commonality. It's something we can get into the habit of doing with maybe without even realizing. Let me say one thing about this thing of complaining. There is a difference between what the psalmists are doing when it says they are expressing their complaints before God. I think that's different because that seems to be a very God-centered complaining, if you want to use that word. They're expressing their faults to God. They're pouring their hearts out, but then they end in this statement of faith. They trust that God will answer. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is this sort of complaining where I'm just grumbling and murmuring and being annoyed at everything and wishing things could be different. And I'm focused very much on myself, what I think I should have or what I think I deserve, what I want. And that's the kind of complaining that I'm talking about. And I think we could give a number of reasons why we do these things, but I don't think any of them are very sufficient. So what's the big deal anyway? Why does this even matter? Okay, so here's the thing. This was a common thing for the Israelites. And I want to take some time today to look at what the Israelites were doing. Remember, the Israelites, the people of God, God had chosen them. They come about through these patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he had brought about the nation. Joseph had been in the land for a time. And so the descendants, the people of Israel, had multiplied greatly. And now you get into the book of Exodus. God shows all these plagues to Pharaoh. He's going to bring his people out of the land of Egypt after they've been there for 430 years. And so you come to Exodus chapter 14. They're leaving the land. They're leaving Egypt. God is bringing them out of the land. And here's what you find said in Exodus chapter 14, verses 11 through 12. We'll back up to verse 10. So they're leaving the land, and apparently the Egyptians are chasing them. When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." You remember before this that God had shown them and manifested them these great demonstrations of power. He had done these plagues so that Pharaoh would know that he is the Lord and he is saving his people. But now it seems they're doubting. They're afraid because these Egyptians are chasing them. And so in that sense, it's understandable. But remember what God had just done. He wasn't going to allow them to be immediately destroyed by the Egyptians. He was bringing his people out and he was going to save them. But this isn't the only time they do this. You get into the next chapter. They sing this song in chapter 15 expressing thankfulness, praise to God for what he's done in bringing them out of the land. He's destroyed the Egyptians. They've been drowned in the depths of the sea. And they're expressing praise and thankfulness to him. But then you come down, they've just gotten into the wilderness in verse 22. And they come to this place and it has bitter water, they can't drink it. And here's what they say in verse 24. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, And he threw it in the water, and the water became sweet. You notice that they had just sung this song to the Lord. They just saved them from the Egyptians. And so now they've been without water for 3 days. And so they're grumbling about that. You notice actually in chapter 15 some of the language that's used. Notice verse 11. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome and glorious deeds, doing wonders? Notice verse 13. You have led in your steadfast love the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them by your strength to your holy abode. They seem to think that God can do these amazing things. And yet, here in this instance, they seem to be grumbling against Moses because they don't have water. And again, perhaps in some way this is understandable. I mean, if I'd gone without water for 3 days, I'd be getting pretty thirsty. And so it's understandable in some sense. But I think what we're going to see is as you keep moving through the story with the Israelites, it gets less and less justifiable. And so you come to chapter 16. And I won't read all of this. I will read a couple of sections here. So let's start in verse 2 and 3. Chapter 16. Again, they're in the wilderness, and this is immediately after God has now given them water. And I'll read verses 2 and 3. And the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the people of Israel said to them, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the meat pots and ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Notice also verses 7 and 8. So this is when God is speaking to Moses and Aaron, and he's telling them what he's going to do. And here's what's going to happen. "In the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against the Lord. For what are we that you grumble against us?" And Moses said, "When the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling that you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord." And also notice verse 12. This is the Lord speaking to Moses. "I have heard the grumbling of the people of Israel. Say to them, at twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God." So they've complained that, well, this huge army is chasing them, and so they're going to be afraid, and so they're grumbling against, "Now you're going to let us die in the wilderness? What was the point in bringing us out?" But God, again, he provides for them. He destroys the Egyptians, so they complain about water. He gives them water. And so you come to this, and they're complaining about food. And now he says, okay, you know who you're really complaining against? You're really complaining against God. "I'm going to show you," the Lord says to Moses. "I'm going to show them that I am the Lord their God." You know, it's interesting that that's what exactly what he was showing to Pharaoh, that he is the Lord. He is the God of all the earth. And now he's going to show them, because it seems as if they don't exactly believe this. And so it's interesting also, one other thing you should notice about this is how they speak of Egypt. You notice what they said about it in verse 3. They talk about Egypt saying that we had meat pots and ate bread to the full. But you brought us out into this wilderness to die. It's interesting that they describe the land of slavery as a place where they ate bread and meat and they had these great things. And so I have a professor at Florida College who said it this way: complaining about the present leads them to idealize the past. Their complaining right now in this moment leads them to forget what the past was really like. They think Egypt was now this wonderful place, or at least they're starting to make it out to be. And it doesn't just happen here, it's going to happen again and again. And so you're seeing this progression. It seems to be getting worse and worse. They're complaining. But anyway, he's fed them now. And so you come to Exodus chapter 17. They're set out, they're in the wilderness, and they're moving by stages. And notice with me chapter 17, verses 1 through 3. "All the congregation of the people of Israel moved on from the wilderness of Sin by stages, according to the commandments of the Lord, and camped at Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." And Moses said to them, "Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?" But the people thirsted there for water, and the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" Notice also verse 7. This is after the fact. "And he called the name of that place Massa and Meribah, because of the quarreling of the people of Israel, and because they tested the Lord by saying, 'Is the Lord among us or not?'" So this has progressed a little bit farther now. Doesn't this sound familiar, though? I mean, it's like we just read a minute ago that they thirsted for water and they complained about it. It's almost like this happened before. This is the second time and it hasn't even been that long. I mean, we're talking the matter of maybe weeks, months at most. This hasn't been very long and yet they're still complaining. And it even says here that they're now testing the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" So it's interesting that that happens. They're testing the Lord. This is more than just a simple complaint. They are now testing the Lord, saying, "Well, is he really here? Is he really care for us? Does he really listen?" Some bold claim to say. Well, it doesn't stop here. You may think it eventually is going to, but it doesn't seem to stop quite yet. And so we move through Exodus 19 through 40 and Leviticus 1 through 27, the whole book of Leviticus, not reading that, just to be clear. But this whole section following this is really about the law. They're at Sinai. Moses is receiving these words from God, and he's going to communicate to them his law, which consumes the rest of the book of Exodus and all of Leviticus. And so you get into the book of Numbers, and they're still at Sinai. They're getting ready to leave, to head, to take the land. And so the first 9 chapters is talking about the various duties they'll have. It takes a census, a numbering of the people. But then you come to chapter 11. At this point, it has been about roughly a year since they've left the land. Chapter 10 and verse 11, it tells us that when they leave Sinai, in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month, and the cloud lifted from over the tabernacle, over the testimony. And so it's been about a year, a little bit longer, and so they're leaving Sinai, and you come to chapter 11. And notice with me verses 1 through 4. "And the people complained at the hearing of the Lord about their misfortunes. And when the Lord heard it, his anger was kindled, and the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some outlying parts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses, and Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So the name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of the Lord burned among them. Now the rabble that was among them had a strong craving. And the people of Israel also wept again and said, 'Oh, that we had meats to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt that cost nothing, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our strength is dried up, and there is nothing at all but this manna to look at.'" So the people are complaining about their misfortunes. It doesn't even say here what they're complaining about specifically. It just says misfortunes. But you remember, God is now providing for them. He is giving them manna. He is feeding them. And he'd actually, when we looked back in Exodus, he'd actually said that he's going to provide them manna this whole time they're in the wilderness. And so here what we see happening is they're doing the same thing they were before, except it seems to be worse, because you can think through this and think, okay, what are they really lacking? God is providing for them food and water, and they're wandering in the wilderness. Yes, but God is providing for them. And yet here they are again complaining. And it even takes it farther, because again, they're talking about, "We remember how when we were in Egypt, we had fish, we had cucumbers, melons. It didn't even cost anything." Have they forgotten that this was the land of slavery? And so fire burns among them. God is not happy with this. But even then, some of them have this strong craving, and it seems that they're taking it a step further. And what it tells us, as you read through the rest of the story, in verse 20, that they've in fact rejected God. Notice verse 20.
But a whole month, let me back up to verse 19 to give you context. He's telling them that they're going to eat this manna while they're in the wilderness. You shall not eat just one day or 2 days or 5 days or 10 days or 20 days, but a whole month until it comes out your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him saying, why did we come out of Egypt? Notice what happens to these people in verse 32 through 34 of this same chapter, Numbers 11. And the people of Israel rose all that day and all night and the next day and gathered the quail. Those who were gathered least gathered 10 omers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp. While the meat was yet between their teeth, before it was consumed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck down the people with a very great plague. Therefore that name of the place was called Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had the craving. From Kibroth Hattaavah, the people journeyed to Hazeroth, and they remained at Hazeroth. Even without a good reason, it seems, to complain, they still find something to complain about. And we see that it's gotten worse and worse. They've gone from testing the Lord. They've gone to having some legitimacy for their claim. They need water and food. But now they're just complaining about, finding something to complain about. They're testing the Lord, but in doing so, they've also taken it a step farther and in a sense rejected him. Let's just go back to Egypt, the land he just delivered us out of. And so this isn't just a simple complaint. It's just like, well, you know, it doesn't really matter that much. No, this is a serious thing. And so they should be learning this lesson now. They just had a plague that killed a lot of them that had this craving. All of them that had this craving and saying, let's go back to Egypt. They're now all dead. You would think this would tell the people, okay, this is a serious thing. We ought not to do this. But you come to Numbers chapter 14. The spies have just spied out the land of Canaan. They're getting ready to enter the land, and they give the reports, a bad report, 10 of them. And here's how the people respond. Numbers 14, verses 1 through 4. Then all the congregation of Israel raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to him, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us out this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to one another, let us choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Wow. This has progressed so far. And understand this. What are they doing here when they're complaining? Because again, I've mentioned that it's not just a simple complaint. Notice what it says in verse 11. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will this people despise me? And how long will they not believe me in spite of all the signs that I have done for them? What they were really doing here in complaining was showing an extreme lack of faith. They did not believe that God was going to give them the land. They did not believe that God was going to save them and take care of them and provide for them. And that was a problem. That's what they were really doing here. Complaining, you could say, would be a symptom of that problem. They did not believe that God was going to give them the land. They did not believe in God enough, even though, despite all the things that he had already done. And it seems that they, now because of this, you come to verses 26 through 35. Notice the consequences here. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall this wicked congregation grumble against me? I have heard the grumblings of the people of Israel, which they grumble against me. Say to them, as I live, declares the Lord, what you have said in my hearing, I will do to you. Your dead bodies shall fall in the wilderness, and of all your number listed in the census from 20 years old and upward, who have grumbled against me, not one shall come into the land where I swore that I would make you dwell, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun. But your little ones who you said would become a prey, I will bring in, and they shall know the land that you have rejected. But as for you, your dead bodies shall fall in the wilderness, and your children shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years, and shall suffer for your faithlessness, until the last of your dead bodies lie in the wilderness. According to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, a year for each day, you shall bear your iniquity 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. I, the Lord, have spoken,
"Surely this will I do to all the wicked congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall come to a full end, and there they shall die." So you think this isn't serious? None of them, 20 years old and upward, whole generation, is going to die. Not a single one of them, 20 years old and upward, is going to enter the land now. All of them are going to die in the wilderness. You think this is a serious thing? God takes this seriously. He needs them to believe in Him. He wants them to believe in Him. And yet they're not doing that. At this point, we would expect, okay, now they've got it. They're not going to complain anymore, so not to make anything any worse. Numbers chapter 16. While they're in the wilderness, there's this group, specifically Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. There's these Levites who think that they deserve more. They deserve more in the priesthood and administering to God, even though they're Levites and already have the privilege of handling some of the furniture. And now they think they deserve more. And so here in this chapter, the earth swallows them up, and God demonstrates that He will be treated as holy. And so He kills them. And here's how the people respond in verses 41 and then verses 46 through 49. "But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, 'You have killed the people of the Lord.'" And so God responds and He causes this thing. And notice what it says in verse 46 through 49. "And Moses said to Aaron, 'Take your censer and put fire on it from the altar and lay incense on it and carry it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun.' So Aaron took it as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly, and behold, the plague had already begun among the people. And he put on the incense and made atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the affairs of Korah. And Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting when the plague was stopped." The Lord is killing them for this. They're not treating God as holy, and they're not trusting in Him. And that's causing severe consequences. Not only would all their bodies die in the wilderness, now 14,000 or 15,000 of them almost has now died because they are grumbling against Him for killing these people who had not treated God as holy. It's interesting when you think of this idea, because what's happening here is God has now sent a plague on them. This is the second time He has done that. This is exactly what He had done to the Egyptians in judging them because they have not served God. He was showing to them that they're God, and He did plagues on them so that they would do what He said. So the judgment He put on the Egyptians, He's now placing on Israel too. This is a serious thing, and it seems as if they've forgotten. Now one more instance in which this happens. Numbers chapter 20. Again, you come to verses 2 and 3, 2 through 4. And you notice what happens. "Now there was no water for the congregation, and they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And the people quarreled with Moses and said, 'Would that we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the assembly of the Lord into the wilderness that we should die here, both we and our cattle? And why have you made us come up out of the Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is no place for grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, and there is no water to drink.' And so again they complain before the Lord, and the Lord ultimately provides for them. But this is actually the third time now that they've complained that they don't have water. And what this tells me and what this shows is that it's so easy to forget what God has done. And we need to take this to heart, because this is a serious thing. This wasn't just a simple thing. In fact, they are, in a different case, I think, they're attacked by serpents for this. And I'll get to that in a minute, but this is a serious thing, and it can't be taken lightly. It's almost as if you read through, you might be reading through the Bible, and this has happened to me. And I'm like, okay, you get to this, and I almost expect the people of Israel are now going to complain, because they've done this so much already.
It's taken one step further. In chapter 21, read with me verses 4 through 9. From Mount Hor, they set out by way to the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the people became impatient on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, "Why have you brought us out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and we loathe this worthless food." Then the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, so that many people of Israel died. And the people of Israel came to Moses and said, "We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord that he may take away the serpents from us." So Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, "Make a fiery serpent and set on it a pole, and everyone who is bitten when he sees it shall live." So Moses made a bronze serpent and set it on a pole, and if a serpent bit anyone, he would look at the bronze serpent and live. Once again, they've done something. They've complained against God, but they've even called the food, the blessing of God, as worthless. "We hate this worthless food." Can you imagine saying something like that? The Lord, the thing he's blessing you with, you're now saying, "I hate it. It's worthless. It doesn't mean anything." And there's even another instance in Deuteronomy 1 and verse 27. They actually accuse the Lord of hating them. Deuteronomy 1 and verse 27. "And you murmured in your tents and said, 'Because the Lord has hated us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us.'" It seems that in this case they repent, and you don't really see this come up a whole lot more. And so perhaps in this case, they've now finally realized their mistakes in doing this and establishing this habit of complaining. But how much did it cost them? How far did you think they realized at the beginning how far this would take them? That in not trusting the Lord and complaining against him and rejecting him, that they would not only not inherit the land, plagues would come upon them, fires, serpents, and all these acts of judgment, but ultimately all of them would die in the wilderness and would not be able to enter the land? Did you think they realized that at first? And even then, it was bad for them because they were saying things that to us look terrible. They were accusing God of hating them, calling his blessings worthless. And so this is a serious thing. They even start to think that Egypt is some great place. You would have expected them to be thankful to God for bringing them out of the land of Egypt, to trust him that he's going to provide them and give them this land. But that's not what happens. And so there's consequences for that. And this is almost a sad thing that you see, that all this congregation has to die in the wilderness. But of course, none of this applies to us because we never complain. This is just the Israelites. Of course, we're nothing like them. So I've never done this myself, of course. I'm being sarcastic, of course. But it's not just them. We do this too. And it can be so easy to focus on what we don't have and fall into this habit without even realizing it. And again, it's not good for us. There's consequences for doing this. And so you'll notice the verse we had on the screen, we have right here, 1 Corinthians 10, gives us a very good, tells us something very important that we should take note of. 1 Corinthians 10, and I will read verses 9 through 12. "We must not put Christ to the test, as some of them did, and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did, and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction, on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, because of this," what he just said, "let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall." I would like to say that I've never done things like this, but it's sad to say that I have. And I know that. And it's wrong. It's not the right thing to do. This isn't just written for no reason whatsoever, as if they did it, but we'll never do it. This is written because we need to see their example and what resulted from that, what they did. Because this can happen to us if we're not careful. And we ought not to be so prideful to think that it won't. Again, let anyone who thinks that he stands, you better be careful. Take heed lest he fall.
And so we need to be careful. There's another passage that I want to look at in the New Testament that really helps crystallize what we as God's people should be doing instead. And notice with me verses Philippians 2, verses 14 through 16. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless, innocent children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Here's another reason why this is important. It says that everything we do is supposed to be not done with this. Don't do anything with this complaining attitude. And the reason we're trying not, we don't want to have that attitude, is because we're supposed to be the unblemished, the innocent, the children of God who shine as lights in this crooked generation. What's going to be the implication if we're always going about complaining about what we don't have or what we think we deserve, and other people see that? What are they going to think about the people of God? If I go around doing that, what are they going to think of me? As a preacher, as a Christian, as someone who's trying to serve God with my life, what kind of impact is that going to have? We are supposed to be lights in the world. We cannot have this attitude. There's a couple of other places this used in 1 Peter 4 and verse 9. It says, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. This was just another instance. But the idea is that everything we do, we should not have this attitude. We should not be complaining. It's actually used in reference to these people in Jude, which we brought up earlier. These people who are these deceivers, these destroyers. They're these false teachers who are bringing on all these evil things. And that's why Jude is appealing to them to contend for the faith. And in verse 16, it describes them as grumblers. So I would like to say that there's no problem with us for this. But I know with me, that's not the case. In fact, if you don't know who I am, I lived in Illinois for a lot of my life, in Pontiac, so I grew up there. But a couple of years ago, my family moved to Florida. Let me just say that was one of the hardest things I have to do. I left all my family here, like all my extended family. I had my other family, but I'd gotten so used to being among my family, having these great things, that when I moved to Florida and lost all that, lost my congregation I'd grown up with, it got very easy for me to complain about these things. And I didn't do the best about that. I got into this habit of complaining about it. And I even looked back on the times we were in Illinois and thought it was this perfect place. I started to think that, okay, that sounds weird, but the people I'd grown up with, the place in which I grew up with, I knew. I mean, it was comfortable to me. The things that I thought of, how I did these things with my grandparents or spent time with the people here, I remembered that and thought everything must be perfect before I moved to Florida. And I started to think I failed to be able to look at all the things that I had now. And I think I've gotten better at that now, but I still sort of struggle with it because I still think and sort of idealize the past just like the Israelites did. And so I say this not because I'm trying to condemn you all, but because I've struggled with this myself. The reason I'm preaching this lesson isn't because I'm trying to point the finger at you or I'm trying to point the finger at the Israelites or anything like that. This is a problem that can be so easy that we don't even realize. I didn't realize. And so that's why it's so important to be taking care that we don't do this. And this can happen, like I said, in a number of different ways. You think about the workplace. I've done this myself. I've heard people complain among me. I worked a job doing landscaping, and they seemed to always be complaining that they didn't get paid enough, they weren't treated right, or something like that. Maybe when it comes to finances, it can be easy to complain, like, how am I going to pay the bills this week? How am I going to do this or do that? I've got to fix this. And so we could be complaining about that. It can be easy to complain about people in government. You know, they're not perfect people, and it can be easy to, like, man, I wish I got this political candidate elected because this one is just stinks. Or we say things you've heard enough in the past year and a half, 2 years, about COVID. You've heard people complain about that. about Zoom, about masks, about the whole situation where we have to stay at home or be quarantined. In relationships, this happens. I've heard it myself plenty of times in college about this certain teacher did this or this certain teacher said this. I can't believe them. We hear it on social media, things like that. And I've even heard it among brethren, and I've done that myself. I cannot believe this brother would say this, or I cannot believe this brother thinks this about this. We ought not to do that. That isn't right. And I think the world has tried to tone it down for us and to make it look like this sin isn't really that much of a problem. They've relabeled it to, oh, you're just venting, or you're just expressing your feelings. But that's wrong. We cannot allow the world to inform us of what this is over this to the detriment of obeying the Scriptures. We need to obey the Scriptures, not what the world says. We need to obey the Scriptures. And I think God has something better in mind. I've talked about this issue, but I've also touched on why this issue exists. This lack of faith, this lack of thankfulness to God. And you think about the kind of people we ought to be. We ought to be less focused on what we don't have and more focused on what we do. And so you find this passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, in verse 18. Let me turn there quickly. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, in verse 18. And here's what it says. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. So a simple question just on that is, how can we be complaining if we're always giving thanks? This is the kind of people we ought to be. We ought to recognize that whatever we're going through, God will provide. He has provided in history. We can see that. You know, when I woke up this morning, I woke up on a comfortable bed. I woke up with my sins forgiven. That is a blessing. I preached a lesson recently on Ephesians chapter 1 with all these spiritual blessings in Christ. Those cannot be taken away. And I think if we're more focused on what we do have as opposed to what we don't have, we're going to be able to do a lot better with not complaining. Let me use one example. So there's this person named Sandra Green. She's from Jamaica. There was an old a preacher friend of mine who was telling me about this person. So she's from Jamaica. She was taking six children, one of which had a mother who had died. And she was finding the time to take them all to VBS. She didn't make any excuses. He asked to visit her house because he saw how diligently she was trying to go about doing the Lord's work. And so he came to her house. He said it made him cry. It was just a small shack, a one-room shack, one room. No lights, no running water. There's only two pieces of furniture in the entire house. There's six kids and her. And he found a piece of paper. And it said, "Thank you, Lord. My needs are met, and healing is mine. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus." That's pretty inspiring to me. Because we could say very easily that we can find a lot of things to complain about. And we do, oftentimes. I do. But this person, despite all the reasons you could say that she could have given to for why she should be allowed to complain, she just said thank you for the things she does have. And she has a whole lot less than I do. A lot less than all of us do. And she found a way to be thankful. And so, in concluding all this, I want you to think about a couple of things. One, that complaining can bring us down a road we don't want to go down. It's not good for us, and it's going to result in a lot of consequences. Two, that we don't want to be prideful to think this can never happen to us, because I know this can happen to us. This is something to be careful of. Let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. And I think here's the third thing, that we need to be thankful. We need to have faith in God and recognize that He's going to provide. And He's already done all these great, magnificent things. And we ought to remember that. So let me challenge you to two things. I want you to take time. And I'm going to do this myself because I need to do this myself. Take time every day to thank God for what He's giving you. And two, maybe you don't know if you're in this habit or not and you want to know. Maybe you don't think you are. Maybe you think you are. Maybe just do some introspection. I've done this for myself, and I know I can do better, and so I'm trying to do better. But do some introspection every once in a while. Think about the different circumstances in life which you're presented with, and think about whether you're doing this. I'm growing to be better, and I have a little ways to go yet, a lot long ways to go yet. But by God's grace, I know I can get there. I know I can be the sort of this sort of person that is reflecting God in everything, that is a thankful and faithful person, a more thankful and faithful person every day. And by God's grace, I believe so can you.